All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. Coming up, I'll tell you why Aaron Rodgers should make another big demand of the Packers. But we begin today where we left off yesterday with LeBron James. The reviews are all in for LeBron's profanity and N-word-laced answer to Donald Trump's apprentice. According to the professional reviewers, LeBron's shop is a Grand Slam home run. The Ringer coos that LeBron has found his voice. The Sporting News proclaimed the shop delivered a candid, captivating conversation. Slate says the shop is an unfiltered glimpse into Black America. Really? An unfiltered look into Black America? Maybe a suburb in Marvel's Wakanda. But even T'Challa, the Black Panther, found the red wine-filled goblets laughable. The shop is more of a glimpse into Jay-Z's backyard barbecue than a reflection of Black American life. And as far as candid, captivating conversation, the discussion wasn't even Twitter deep. At least on Twitter, there is some resistance, some pushback. The shop is a layup line. That's what's so disappointing. LeBron, like a lot of elite athletes, believes that iron sharpens iron on the court. Off the court, like a lot of elite athletes, celebrities, and multimillionaires, LeBron prefers to be worshipped rather than challenged. He doesn't want his ideas or beliefs publicly opposed. He and his elite friends have everything figured out. In their minds, their ideas and point of view can't be sharpened by resistance. Genuflection improves their brand, but it weakens their mind. The debut of the shop was a Twitter-like echo chamber for high-class victimhood. Oh, I'm treated like a zoo animal. People want me to dance. Every other country treats me better than America. They don't criticize Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady the way they do me. Everybody on that damn show is living the American dream. God blessed them with a gift, and they're using it to improve their lives and the lives of the people they love. America is just like life. Unfair. Whining won't make America more fair. Explaining to people how to combat unfairness will. But you can't do that when you're wallowing in victimhood and surrounded by people who won't challenge your naive thinking. At one point during the shop, LeBron stated that he was raised on rappers, Biggie, Pac, Jay-Z, and Snoop. Those were LeBron's intellectual scholars, not Martin, Malcolm, Thurgood, or hell, even Jesse Jackson. The shop is the black kiddie pool, and LeBron is the lifeguard. No wonder the show is being celebrated. All right, joining me now, Doug Gottlieb, Fox Sports Radio host, Dante Jones, former NBA champion, LeBron James teammate, and Jason McIntyre of The Big Lead. Guys, this is my problem. We'll start with you, Dante. You got the closest relationship to LeBron. You're my number one critic here on this show. I don't think LeBron and a lot of elite athletes and celebrities, they hate being challenged. That's what they've so pampered off the court. They love to be challenged on the court. Off the court, they want no resistance.
I don't think this was the forum for challenge. I think it disappointed you because you wanted it to be something that it's not and it's never was going to be. You wanted a debate show. You wanted to see people argue. You wanted to see LeBron talk to somebody in black culture about black culture. It never stated that in the previews. It was a collection of individuals in his circle or people that he wanted to talk to, giving their perspective about their lives. That's what it was. He gave his perspective about what goes on with his kids, how he first entered into an all-white school. I thought the perspective about taking pictures was something that was close to my heart and close to other athletes, because when you're spending time with your family, you want time with your family. People don't understand how one picture turns into two, two turns into 10, 10 turns into 100, and then an hour goes by and your family's still sitting by there looking like, oh, we want time with our dad, not the superstar that he is. So I thought it was a show of perspective. I thought it was something different. It wasn't a CNN debate show, which it was never going to be. Barbershops are not all debates. They're not. They're men having conversations, and sometimes they get into an argument, but sometimes they do. And they did get into one argument at the end of the show. Go ahead.
Doug, I'll let you go. You've made a hell of an argument, and they need to change the show to perspective rather than the bar.
It's the shop. That's it. It's the shop. It does not say arguments.
But in a barbershop, there aren't people giving dissertations, right? There's you say.
Yeah, they are.
People are speaking about their perspective.
When Snoop Dogg says, you know, that black men are more respected outside of the United States than they are the. There's not anybody in the room that says, Didn't we just have a black president? Was there a black president in France? Was there a black president in England? Like, there's literally no one pushing back against things. And it's not true that...
You took that out of context. Okay, I'm sorry.
How did I take it out of context?
Because he was speaking in a fan's perspective, not and as being a citizen of that country. It's different. It was saying for fan love because and I think he didn't understand the point of they don't get as much exposure to him, so that's why they come out in flocks when he does come to their country. Like it's different when you're belonging to him.
No way,
I don't think we took it differently.
Think like Snoop Dogg and I,
he didn't say I'd rather be in that country. He just said we get more fan love.
I didn't say that he did. Okay. I just said he said that black people get more respect outside the United States than they do in the United States. Like
that is what he said,
which is completely inaccurate.
In some respect we do. In some respect, not in a full scope of things, but in some respect we do.
Take Snoop to a European soccer match where they throw bananas at black athletes. That doesn't happen here in America. And if it does, trust me, there's ramifications for it.
Look, I love Snoop, okay? But the fact is, like, Snoop has gone from jail to being a rapper to being some sort of mogul. He's beloved. He can get on any TV show anywhere, go to any concert, any show, anywhere in America. He's beloved. This idea he doesn't have respect. Like, I must be living in a completely a parallel universe from the one in which Snoop believes he's operating. Look, I like part of the show. I like part of the perspectives in talking about watching his son play. There's nothing like, but even when Jon Stewart asked him, and again, like, I don't know why Jon Stewart's in that other than to fit a cliche.
I understand why Jon Stewart's there. Because you need somebody in TV to direct the
TV experience
to direct the conversation.
I want to focus, guys, on LeBron being challenged. This is the trend in media. You know that, right? Tiger Woods notoriously is not like the media. He started a website. I'll talk to my fans through the website. Derek Jeter starts the Players Tribune. We don't need the media. We'll cut the middleman out. We will directly speak to fans. LeBron now has his show. He doesn't have anybody on there challenging him. He's sitting there with friends having a conversation. I know the media may not like to hear this, all these outlets that are praising the show, but this is where we're headed. The athletes are big enough. They don't need the media. They are cutting out the middleman.
But if you pay attention to the brand of Uninterrupted, the company was founded on the foundation of we're going to give the athletes their turn to speak rather than have to go through the media. And that's where the shop comes from, that company, because they want to give the athlete their time to talk. That's it. And that's all the shop is.
Hellacious, you awesome job. Seriously, and I'm not being condescending. Awesome job. But I'm just saying for LeBron James, if he wants to have a platform for athletes and celebrities just to pontificate and gift us their opinions and put them out there like somehow they're more important than everybody else's or some more insightful or whatever, he's going to have to deal with people like me saying, you know, that's stupid. And a lot of things that were said in there were stupid and elite and had no connection to modern middle America, the typical black people's life. And so to me, they need some opposition in there just so they can get some facts involved in their pontificating, because to me it's just a group of elites saying a bunch of stuff they really don't know anything about and pretending like it has anything to do with a barbershop is ridiculous.
I respect that opinion. I respect that perspective of the show, and that's where the show may need to grow too. And if I know him as a person, and as a person, he's always looking to grow. He's always looking to get better. And that may be where this show goes to, but I think it's a lot of criticism on one episode, on the first episode of the show, how they started. It could grow to that. And I think it may.
Actually, Jason's point was there isn't a lot of criticism. And because the show has been widely, you know, people are just giving him a hug, right? And everyone's saying how great it is. It's not going to change. It's not going to evolve. They're going to keep doing the same thing.
But we don't.
Survivor's remorse.
We don't.
2.0.
We don't know. And maybe that's what people want to see.
But he's talking about a very small minority that want this change, want the challenge. He's talking to his fans out there. They eat this up. We rarely get to see LeBron speak candidly, drop curse words, the N-word.
And it's 11 o'clock show too. It's not like
HBO. 11 o'clock.
It's not ABC. Sorry.
You know, I really had. Been that when I watched LeBron play basketball, I was like, man, I can't wait to see him drop the N-word. I can't wait to hear him curse. I never get enough cursing and N-word. You know, I only hear it in rap music. I really was waiting for some celebrity athlete to get on TV and curse and carry on like he's a rapper buffoon. I was hoping LeBron would give me.
So just because you curse makes you a buffoon.
But the show is fake.
Just because you use certain words makes you a buffoon. You don't look at what he's actually saying. You don't look at his perspective. You don't look at anything else except the curse word. over, because and that's very
cluttered.
Unfair.
It's cluttered by the distractions of the cursing and
that's
the
just your opinion. Some people use curse words, some people don't. That doesn't make you less intelligent.
I understand that people do use it, okay? Mm-hmm. But when you want to elevate the conversation, yes. You're taking away from the conversation you're having by using that language. And what you're telling us is, everything I've ever said before is nonsense. This is how I really am. That's what you're telling us. So we're like, all right, LeBron? Because if I'm changing my brand,
let me drop on one other point there. Let me piggyback off you there and to respond to Jason. I've listened to the entire media for the last year and a half, 2 years, tell me that Donald Trump's profanity, crude language, everything is an abomination. And again, I get he's the president, but we got to have one standard.
We are being absolutely, that is absolutely not fair to compare Donald Trump's statements to a couple curse words and the N-word. Those are not the same. You cannot, those are not parallel.
It was
not
a crude, profane show.
It wasn't crude, it was a use of words that you may not use, but that doesn't make it right or wrong.
The president on Twitter versus LeBron on HBO?
Hey, that's not even fair,
I'm gonna tell you, my point is, LeBron James has put himself out there as one of the highest profile critics of this crude, profane president.
Is he talking about women? If
I was sitting here today talking about, Doug, you need to lose weight, at some point somebody would look at me like, hey, man, why don't you drop a few? And so that's what happens.
But is he demeaning women?
No, he's not.
He may have cursed, but the message is not the same.
Look, he's saying it's hypocritical. One thing that I think all of us do know and respect about LeBron is he's far smarter than his level of education, right? Like, no one would dispute that. Because normally you say, like, a high school graduate from one parent home, but when you listen to him and you know all the things he does, he's far brighter. He's above using the language that he had to use. Like, you can say that's keeping it real, but that's when keeping it real goes wrong. Look, the easiest way to see that there was no reality in the barbershop is, here he is in a barbershop with a hat on and nobody ever talked to LeBron about his lid and what's going on. Like, he doesn't want anybody talking about the yes, in barbershops there are guys pontificating, but there's also somebody in the back questioning your pontification, and there was none of that.
In a barbershop, it's fine. You can't just climb in the ring with LeBron James, okay? This guy's at the apex of the sport. He's the number one guy.
He's got a group of his peers.
Yeah, his peers, and they're not challenging him. You guys seem to want to create this guy to come in here and challenge LeBron.
Whoa. I'm not asking anybody. I'm asking that group of people in there, Draymond, John Stewart, Snoop, anybody in that group. There were things in there to be disagreed with.
Unless they all agreed with it.
If they agree,
that's why it's
right.
A bad show, in my opinion, okay. Because it's a bunch of people agreeing. It's all groupthink that's at a Twitter level of fault. There's no depth to it. LeBron James is sitting there bragging, I was raised off of a bunch of gangster rappers. That's his intellectual scholars. That's where he basically presented himself. That's where my point of view comes from. That's a joke. That's a joke and embarrassing. Two of them guys he's talking about got killed in their 20s. And some of their role models or whatever, they're talented rappers. They haven't cornered the market on intellectual thought, black progress, or anything. All I'm saying is, if iron sharpens iron on the court, it sharpens it off the court as well. And if you want to be an intellectual thought leader, if you want to open a school, you want to be an activist, your thoughts need to be challenged. And LeBron James is resisting that challenge. The media is afraid to give him that challenge because they're all, I'll be called racist, or I want to be a part of groupthink. I don't want people on Twitter to attack me. Everybody benefits. I benefit. That's why I love having you on the show. Keep inviting you back. I want you to challenge me because it takes my thinking to a higher level. LeBron could benefit from that.
Even Candace Parker talked about giving birth to her child, right? She's not the first woman ever to go back to work after having a child. It's a great thing that she's able to do to provide for her family. But just the fact that there was never anybody in that room to be like, hey, you know, I mean, listen, Gloria worked when LeBron.
But that's not what you missed that whole point of. She has a short lifespan of her career. She gave up a year of that. She may play 10, 12 years. She gave a year of that. So she gave 10% of her career up to have a child, which we never heard. We never hear a woman speak about that.
All right. Great job. All right. Welcome back. Doug Gottlieb and Jason McIntyre back. We're joined now by Super Bowl champion Mark Slareth. Let's move to college football. where the controversy around Urban Meyer and Ohio State is still lingering. Today, a trustee of the university resigned because he thought the school's suspension of Meyer wasn't strong enough punishment. This just a day after former assistant coach Zach Smith fired off a series of angry tweets denying that he abused his wife, calling Ohio State's investigation and punishment of Meyer a joke and accusing the media of hypocrisy. This thing is not going away and is going to linger over Ohio State's entire college football season. It's going to linger over Urban Meyer. I have mixed emotions about whether or not I think it's fair that this thing is going to linger on and drag out. But I just don't see this going away this season.
Oh, what'd you say? That life ain't fair. It's not, right? I mean, you said that in the first segment. You know, you look. There's no way you can insulate yourself from this, right? 3M doesn't make enough insulation to keep you away from this. And the issue that you get into is regardless where you are and how you try to sequester your players and how you try to basically remove yourself, man, this is going to come up. And I tell you what, on a completely different note, but I was on a Broncos team that went 13-0 to start the season. And it's amazing. Every week, there are more and more people that are on you. Like, what do you guys think? Can you go undefeated? Starts about week 7 and week 8 and then week 9 and then week 10. And then eventually, you know what happened to us in the locker room? One day we got Kadrezzed. Glenn Kadrezz is sitting in the locker room and he broke. And they kept asking him, we're 13-0. And hell yeah, I'm thinking about it. You can't get, yeah, I'm thinking about going undefeated. Of course, we went out and lost that weekend. But the bottom line is this, no matter how much you try to remove yourself, guess what? Your mom's calling, your brother's calling, your friends are calling. They're asking about the situation, what's it like, how Urban is going. I mean, you just can't get away from it. And you will be scrutinized. There's always that yeah, but caveat that no matter what you do, it's not going to go away.
I actually think it's not going to play a big part in this season. I mean, while he's gone, you got on one side Greg Schiano, on the other side Kevin Wilson, two guys who have been decorated head coaches, and two guys, by the way, who have seen their share of controversy during previous stops as well. I think it's different when you're a college kid. I think you can be, you don't have to talk to the media. They can keep you away from it. And this idea that players care, I don't think they do. I think they want to play. I think they want to win for each other and to get to the National Football League. I think it ultimately comes to a head after the season where either the president or Urban Meyer, one of the two will go. You watch. But I honestly believe that this controversy that's locked up into a former assistant coach and the potential of domestic battery and he said and she said what Urban Meyer knew and when he knew and what did he do about it, all of these things are interesting, but the fact is that inside the confines of a locker room, in college at least, I kind of think the players are insulated as opposed to when you're in the National Football League.
I also think it lingers like you guys, but just in the media. The media is going to write about this. They're going to ask Urban, and he can just dodge it. He can dodge it by winning and say, I'm going to only take football questions. And then the first time he goes out and loses, then maybe he gets challenged by the media. But I'm with Doug here. Like, you know, sports are tribal, especially on college campuses. Right now, it's us against the world at Ohio State. Columbus is all together behind Urban Meyer. We will ride or die with our coach. We don't care about the Zach Smith situation. It's behind us. And frankly, I the schedule shapes up pretty good for Ohio State. I can see this team in the playoff.
I think I was there up until this board of trustee member resigning. To me, that gives this a life. And Doug makes the point that maybe the school president gets his job in jeopardy. Maybe the athletic director does. But there is a chance that the president is strong enough, the AD is strong enough, that they're going to follow Michigan State's blueprint. Because if you remember just 6 months ago, 8 months ago, everyone thought Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio were losing their jobs and that Michigan State was engulfed in controversy and no way these guys could survive. And here we are staring at September and those guys are still in place. And the media has moved on. They've jumped from Michigan State to Ohio State. And maybe there will be something else that captures the attention in the news cycle that they move on if Ohio State is strong enough just to weather this.
There's just so much there at Michigan State, and it affected students and student athletes. And, you know, now you have a former gymnastic coach facing criminal charges. I think it is in fact different. But you're right, like everybody atop Michigan State outside of the coaches fell, right? Everyone fell, and rightfully, honestly, so, right? You just, and I think some of that was fear of lawsuit, which they're paying out hundreds of millions of dollars because of those lawsuits. I don't think that's the case here, and I do think this one trustee does make it interesting, but there was also kind of the news and information dump of yesterday, which doesn't completely clear Ohio State or Urban Meyer, but does kind of push you into that side to which what the limited parts that he knew, he seemed to handle in at least on text, right, which is where you're kind of ultimately honest. It felt like he was more honest with us in terms of how he felt about the previous charges and what he knew and how he was kind of covering for Zach Smith while firing him at the same time for a cumulative type
of
thing.
But, Doug, there's one thing in common with the three people Whitlock said. Tom Izzo, Mark D'Antonio, Urban Meyer. They all generate a lot of money for the university. That's the bottom line. No offense to gymnastics, board of trustees guys. They don't matter as much as the basketball and the football coach.
Jason, that's not why they kept their job, though.
Oh, Izzo and D'Antonio?
Tom Izzo had nothing to do with the doctor.
But, as he said, the media came after him. We want him out of here. We want blood. We want heads. The media came after Urban Meyer. They're not going to win that battle.
Well, they're not going to win the battle with Urban Meyer. I mean, they're not going to force him out. But if there's enough publicity and it affects him enough and you have to hear it enough and it affects the kids enough, does he have a situation at the end of the year where he's like, you know what? I mean, he's walked away before. I don't need it. Like, that's the thing that resonates with me.
Just remember, like, you've talked about Jim Harbaugh. There's some pressure to win there. There's the Michigan State still thing hovering. Everybody deals with distractions. And I do think you pointed out, it's a smart point, college towns, it does become us against the world. You can use this at least for the season.
Welcome back. Mark Schlereth is back. We're joined now by Super Bowl champion James Harrison and longtime NFL coach Rob Ryan. Let's move to New York, where reportedly the Jets have named Sam Darnold the starting quarterback, not entirely surprising, after they traded away Teddy Bridgewater. Meanwhile, in Cleveland, top pick Baker Mayfield will get the start in tonight's preseason finale, but will begin the season as the backup. But I still think Baker is in better position for long-term success than Sam Darnold. Baker's got more weapons, yeah. Eventually. Whenever he gets on the field, there's more weapons. Baker, to me, needs to be baked and baked on the sideline. That's better for a starting quarterback than being thrown to the wolves the way Sam Darnold is. This is not me predicting Sam Darnold's going to flop or not have success, but I'd rather be Baker Mayfield. The Jets don't have any weapons.
I agree with you fully. Right now, he has a plethora of receivers. You know, he has Gordon over there. He has
Jarvis Landry.
Got Jarvis Landry. He has a better offensive line. All you got to do is look at the stats. That'll tell you that. He has a running game. And he gets to sit back for a year or however long it may be, six games, eight games, and dissect it, you know, from the sideline without being thrown in the fire, so to speak. So I think long term, he has a better chance of doing better.
Yeah, it'll be interesting in this. The issue, I'd like to say, yeah, but it's Cleveland. And, you know, I mean, continuity and culture and all those things matter. And you're in Cleveland. And you're probably going to have a new head coach at some point if you don't have success right away. I mean, when Baker Mayfield gets the chance to play, it's probably because they're moving in a different direction. So you're going to have to go through another coaching staff. That's a hard thing to do. But now we're talking the Jets, too. And that's not necessarily, you know, been historically
the best
deal either. I will tell you this, both of them exceptionally talented. I think both of them are ready to play. I do. I think both of them.
You should be looking at Rob Ryan when you make those comments.
Okay, you enter a position. Listen, it doesn't mean you're ready to have success. It means you've hit a base level where it's time to see, hey, can you sink or can you swim? Both of these guys are very talented. They've been pretty exceptional in the preseason. Are you going to have learning curve and learning issues? Absolutely. All of us do that come into this league.
You kind of flipped. You didn't like Baker coming out in the draft.
I know. I like him a lot better.
I think Darnold's going to have more of the long-term success because I think he's got more outstanding qualities, in my opinion, as a quarterback than Baker does. I know Baker, he's a competitive guy and all that stuff. I just think Darnold has what the NFL is looking for in a quarterback. I think they're going to surround him with good players because they're going to have good picks. I mean, Darnold's not going to win this year, even though he is a starting quarterback. I think both will probably have new coaches you know, going forward. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of coach they do select. But Darnold does, he's a young guy. I think he's got a lot of work, you know, ahead of him. He does need to improve a few things. But to me, he has more upside than
Baker. What's your problem with Baker Mayfield?
He's not trying. I will tell you this. He's not trying to be a celebrity. I know that. And I'm not saying Baker is. But he is a blue-collar, work-ethic guy.
Right.
He has got unbelievable skills. He's a better athlete than people give him credit for. He's actually an exceptional athlete. He's got great arm talent. But my thing with the Jets right now is you ain't competing with the Patriots anyhow. So, right. I mean, you might as well, hey, grow him up. Is Brady going to play forever? Maybe you know.
Is Cleveland competing with Pittsburgh? I mean, you know, it's all how you look at it. I think Baker Mayfield – you know, he's put in a good situation. He's not thrown out there to the wolves right away.
Right.
But the only thing is, I don't see him with all those qualities. Now, you do say blue collar, mm-hmm. you know, with Sam Darnold. Well, this guy's the blue collar. He's the walk-on.
Right.
He's the guy that twice, you know, walk-on that ended up becoming a starter. I just don't see it. Eventually, you have to replace the walk-on competitive juice in the NFL with real talent. And I think that's where Darnold has the edge.
All right, to Oakland, where John Gruden and Khalil Mack don't seem any closer to resolving their differences, with trade speculation heating up as Mack's holdout appears to have no end in sight. Reportedly, the Raiders are seeking 2 first-round picks for the defensive star, and the Packers were recently rumored to be interested. Listen, I think if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I just got this huge contract. I've seen Brett Favre get Reggie White and win a Super Bowl. I've seen myself get Charles Woodson and win a Super Bowl. If I'm Aaron Rodgers, guess what team is the only team in the NFL that has 2 first-round picks next year? The Green Bay Packers. Guess which team just said Khalil Mack can be had for 2 first-round picks? I think the Raiders are dangling Khalil Mack in front of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. And if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I demand that they go get him.
I don't think Aaron can demand that they go and get him unless he's willing to give something back. Right now, the 2 first-round picks wouldn't be the issue. The issue would be he's going to demand $100-something million. Do they have the room to give him that once they give these 2 first-round picks up?
I find a way to give the guy. I think they got it.
The way the NFL works, I mean, they always talk about the cap. You know, when they talk about the cap, when they don't want to pay you.
Yes.
When they want to pay you, you know what they do? They find room under the cap. They go and negotiate 4 different guys' contracts. They go, hey, look, magic, we found some money. You know, it's really interesting because both those first-round picks are going to be late first-round picks. If the Packers and Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, they should be a playoff-contending team in their division. Minnesota is an excellent team, but they should contend for the playoffs. So you're talking about later-round picks. I don't know where the second pick comes from. Obviously, it comes from a trade. But I will tell you this. The great teams have great rushers on each edge. Like you can break a huddle and you can say, okay, how are we going to deal with Von Miller? Let's deal with Von Miller. But when you break a huddle and you say, hey, you're playing the Chargers and you're saying, how are we going to block Bosa and how are we going to block Ingram? You can't double team everybody. And that is a mess. Could you imagine Green Bay with Matthews on one edge coming off one edge and Mack on the other edge?
It'd be a great fit.
It'd be unbelievable.
No question. It'd be an unbelievable fit. And the thing is, the price is high, 2 first-round picks. I get it. But, look, some of those, and you mentioned it, this could be a later pick, later draft choices. Well, I mean, that's pretty good because half of those guys don't play. They don't pan out to be great players anyway. So it'd be interesting. I can't see Aaron Rodgers demanding anything.
Why not?
Well, because he just made $100 million. I think
that's the time to make demands after they've paid you.
He already did make a demand. He made $100 million.
I get it. But that he now has more leverage. And that seems to have been the formula in Green Bay. Great quarterback, pairing with a great defensive player. Now you have a chance to win a Super Bowl. If I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm tired of being the most talented quarterback. I want to be the most successful quarterback, and he can't get it done without help on the other side of the ball.
I agree, but I think Pettine is a real defensive coordinator. He's going to be excellent there, and I think he'll do a good job.
James, tell him who wins games, coaches or players.
Players wins games all day.
But systems also help.
Exactly.
I think, look, they've got some talent there. They've had talent there. You mentioned Matthews. I mean, shoot, he's a fantastic football
Mike
player.
Mike Daniels is a phenomenal
player. They got an unbelievable inside tackle. They got Mo Wilkerson. I mean, they've got some players that can do some things. But if they add Mac, obviously, you know, their chances go way up. It just, you know, it's an excellent football player, and that's why if it's me, I don't think two first-round picks is too much to pay for an all-pro defensive player that's going to tilt the field.
You don't think a quarterback of his caliber has the leverage to put on the Packers?
I think he has the leverage to put on the Packers, but if he puts that leverage with the deal he just signed, if he's not willing to say, I'm going to find a way that we can slide this over, then I don't think you can demand that.
Oh, yeah, see, I don't think he has to give them anything. I do say you go in there and say, this I would love this. Like, you go in there, you don't demand anything. I mean, you just say, this would really be helpful for us, and I would love to have this player on our team. Well, I mean, can you really demand anything?
I can. I demanded that you be here today.
Okay, well, look at you.
All right, welcome back. James Harrison, Mark Schlereth, and Rob Ryan are back. Let's move to Pittsburgh, where anyone expecting Le'Veon Bell back in Steelers camp this week could be in for some disappointment. Reportedly, Bell told some teammates he'd show up on Labor Day, but now Bell himself says those reports were just, quote, fake news. All right, James kind of hinted at this yesterday that, you know, it would be smart for Le'Veon Bell maybe not to miss a few games. Because he knows he's out of Pittsburgh. I think it may be smart for Le'Veon Bell to sit down in the mirror and have a real conversation with himself and understand part of the reason why he can't get the money that he wants is because of the dumb things he's done. He's gotten himself involved in the drug testing program. He's been suspended. He's had the DUI, arrest with marijuana, things like that. It's the things he did. He's made himself a bit unreliable. And that's why the Steelers aren't comfortable giving him all that money. Last year, I believe it was, Saturday walkthrough, he shows up in the last 5 minutes of a Saturday walkthrough, I think before a playoff game. He's done some things himself that have damaged his value, and he's going to have to deal with that. I think he looks a little worse here than the Steelers.
No, I don't think so. You know, those are past things. Things happen, you know, like he said. But at the end of the day, the Steelers offered him $70 million, right? And like he said yesterday, yes, it was $10 million guaranteed. He's guaranteed $14.5 right now to play under this. I think the Steelers look worse. They really didn't offer him a true, real deal, something that he could look at and say, you know what, give me a minute to think about this so I could look and see if you're anywhere near where I want to be. And they weren't anywhere near that.
I'm not comfortable disagreeing with James, so one of you.
I'm not either.
Yeah. I don't think anybody is. I would agree. This is the issue that I have had with the way the Steelers have handled this. When you negotiate and you negotiate through the media as a franchise, you make the player look bad. I don't know what his market value is, and I understand I'm 100% with you. You are a collection of the decisions you make, and if you make bad decisions, you know, you're going to have to face the music, and there have been some bad decisions, without question. But when your first year guarantees are $10 million, and Todd Gurley's first year guarantees are $22 million in the first year, your total guarantees are $33 million or $32 million, and Gurley's are $45 million. I don't know what universe you live in, but a $12 million difference in the first year to me, that's real money. And that's an insult to a guy who touches the ball more than any other running back in the game. And so my big issue is if you don't want to pay him, I totally understand you not wanting to pay him. He's been hurt. He's had two suspensions. Like, I get that you don't want to pay him. But don't put it out there and put, like, yeah, hey, we offered you a $70 million contract.
You're trying to make him look bad to the fans. The fans are going to be the fans. It doesn't matter.
And you know what they're going to say? They're going to root for the laundry. So they're going to always side with the organization.
No question, because they're a fan. Even if they had offered him 25-cent ticket, come on, you want to be a Steeler for life, don't you? Well, yeah, he wants to be a Steeler for life, but he also wants to be paid at the rate that he deserves to be paid at. So when it comes to the fans, you can't really do anything right unless you sign.
Right.
And they're trying, like you said, they were trying to play it out in the media. We gave him $70 million, but you didn't say what the guarantee was.
Right. I would ask you, like, just defending the guy. Like, is he the hardest back in the National Football League to defend?
He certainly is with that matchup of Brown out on the outside, because you're going to play a split safety defense to try to lean over Brown. Mm-hmm. Now this guy's going to kill you running the football. You have to pick your poison. It's a headache. And you got Roethlisberger at quarterback.
No question.
I mean, it's a major headache. But this guy's a special player. There's no question. But he's also had the issues, like you're saying, you know, off the field and things like that. I think he's going to show up because it's too much money to pass up for a running back that doesn't – they're not going to have as much tread on the tire as the other positions. Did Gurley get a great, a great contract? Absolutely. He just got it, correct?
Yeah.
He just got it. Maybe this young man's going to get it in the future next year. But this year, I think he's still going to show up. He did the year before. I think he shows up. I think.
I disagree with that. Like I said, if I was him, I'm not showing up until I have to so I could get my credit this season. Like you said yourself, tread on the wheels.
Right.
Nowadays, you get around 29, 30 years old, they're trying to put you in the trash heap. He has to get it while he can. And going out there and taking a chance of getting hurt without a huge, insurance policy is not worth it.
But those game checks are huge, though. I mean, you know,
compared to franchise, what he would lose.
All right, to New Orleans, where the Saints just traded a third-round pick to the Jets for Teddy Bridgewater. Bridgewater's NFL future has been murky since his brutal knee injury back in 2016, but NFL Network now says he could be Drew Brees' heir apparent in New Orleans. My position, this guy hasn't played since 2015, and you just gave up a third-round pick for him? He's had a devastating knee injury. He hasn't played since. Would anybody give up a third-round pick for Colin Kaepernick? He hasn't played either since 2016. That I like the play here of taking a flyer on Teddy Bridgewater as a potential long-term solution in New Orleans. I just think a third-round pick's too high of a pick.
Well, I think there's a dearth of quarterbacks in this league. Teddy Bridgewater came out in training camp. He played exceptionally well. He stayed healthy. He went to every practice. Talking to the Jets coaches, he was exceptional, and he was exceptionally healthy during the course of training camp. Bottom line is, this is a Nick Foles effect. But you lose, you've got a New Orleans team that is one play away from being an NFC championship, and they understand with young quarterbacks behind Drew Brees, if we lose Drew Brees, we're done.
Right.
If we lose him for 4 to 6 weeks, we are done. We don't have a quarterback that can take a team that actually has NFL and Super Bowl aspirations. We have got to go get ourselves somebody who can
Blind squirrel, you found a nut. Okay.
Very good point. I think the other thing is the third round pick for a player you're using this year. Like, you get the use of him the entire season without it costing you anything. It doesn't cost you a third rounder till next year. So you get this insurance, which it is, it's great insurance, for a whole year with no cost to you. I mean, none, zero.
Yeah.
So that's outstanding to have. And I agree 100% with the Foles thing. I mean, smart teams do smart things. This is a smart move by New Orleans.
Yeah, I agree with these guys wholeheartedly. And, they can end up making them look bad when Brees is done. You know, he may come in there and be that perennial starting quarterback and start being a Pro Bowler and so on and so forth. So they may look bad by just only getting a third.
Listen, you guys are both, Mark, you've made the point he's looked good in training camp and preseason. As a coaching staff and as an organization, can someone show that kind of value in preseason where the defenses are that vanilla, the play is that inconsistent?
I think you go back to 2015 and you see the way he played, and he played well. And then you take this preseason, not so much about the way he played, and he did play well. Coaches are rave about how he played. But they rave about the work ethic and how healthy he actually is. Like, he's overcome this. I mean, it's an incredible injury that he had. He almost lost his leg. And he's back healthy. He's not spending time in the training room. He's at every practice. So this was a prove it on your health year, not on whether you can play or not. He can play, and I think he's shown that he's taken that team. He took Minnesota to the playoffs in 2015.
You think Teddy Bridgewater is happy knowing he's going to sit this year and probably next year behind Drew Brees?
I think so. I think he's going to a great organization. I think, look, it'd be hard for him to think, hey, I'm going to come in and start anywhere right now, coming off that injury, mm-hmm. having to prove himself. I think he would have needed a year anyway to be in that situation. So I think it's a great situation for Bridgewater. I think it's a steal for New Orleans. They get a great professional. I mean, that's what Teddy Bridgewater is. He's a great professional, great kid. He's got tons of talent. He's got time to learn the system, get in there and develop. And look, Breeze will play for another 5 years probably because that's just who he is. But that doesn't mean this guy's value doesn't skyrocket by not even playing a down next
year. Yeah, I want to correct myself. He signed a one-year deal. He'll be a free agent after next year. Your Nick Foles point is excellent. The Saints are a win-now team. Now they got two quarterbacks they feel like they can win with. All right, welcome back. Time for Last Call. Mark Schlereth is here. Let's move to the Rams, who will finish off the preseason tonight without their starting quarterback and running back ever taking the field after Sean McVay decided to sit Jared Goff and Todd Gurley the entire preseason. Mark, is this going to backfire?
Sure, it'll backfire. I still think they're going to be a good team, but offense, especially offensive football, man, it's about rhythm. How do you develop rhythm when you don't actually play? And here's the thing about the way the league is constructed right now. First 3 weeks, 4 weeks are really extended preseason. You're not ready to play, that's where you can make hay, man. You can start off 4-0 if you're ready to play. They're just not going to be ready to play.
Most overconfident team in football, the Los Angeles Rams. All right, to college football, where my Ball State Cardinals kick off their season tonight against Central Connecticut State, a very tough non-conference opponent. As Ball State sets its sight on a MAC and national championship, Mark, what are you giggling about?
A national championship?
Yeah. You don't remember in 2008 when we were ranked 14th, we were undefeated and just a hair away from winning the national championship?
Had you had the grades, you'd have probably gone to Idaho.
Yeah,
you couldn't get in, could you?
You don't remember the 2008 Nate Davis, Darius Hill, Dante Love, great all-time great team?
Nope.
Same thing going on right now with Riley Neal at quarterback, James Gilbert at running back.
All I know is came a tribe from the North, Brave and
Bold. Josh Miller at cornerback, Jake White, middle linebacker.
And gold.
Ball State, baby, national title sleeper.
All their foes.
Heisman Trophy for Riley
Vandals.
White.
Vandals, come on, Neal. You Vandals.